Hi, we're here with Joel Burkle, who will be beginning a dual appointment, I believe it is, in the Departments of Engineering and in the Medical School
In orthopedic surgery, that's right.
Great. Joel, where are you from?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I don't really know exactly where I'm from. My folks are in Illinois.
Uh-huh.
I grew up all over the place in South America and went to high school in Illinois and then academic career. So,
what took you to South America?
So we lived in La Paz, Bolivia for 4 years when
wow.
I was a kid, yeah. It was fantastic.
The only thing I know about Bolivia is that, two things, I guess, that it's named for Simón Bolívar.
That's right.
And that Che Guevara was killed there.
That's true.
And, I know that Evo Morales is the president.
Right.
I'm sorry, so you ended up there how?
So my dad was pastor of the one English-speaking church in La Paz.
There you go.
And so we lived there for 4 years.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you went to high school in Illinois?
I went to high school in Illinois, and then undergrad in Western Pennsylvania.
And where was that?
Grove City College.
Where is that?
It's about an hour north of Pittsburgh.
How'd you become, first of all, how did you like Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh is a great town.
We have this kind of rivalry with Pittsburgh,
that's
obviously.
Right.
Because we're the two cities that are outside what they call the T, which
uh-huh.
is the rest of the state. And the other thing is that it's a very different feel from what I understand in Pittsburgh. It's like Philadelphia is very much a northeast city.
That's true.
And whereas yeah. Pittsburgh is sort of more Midwestern.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is interesting for the hills and the rivers and the topography makes it a really interesting town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you went to Grove City, you said?
I went to Grove City College and then I went to graduate school at Georgia Tech.
Right, right.
And did my degrees both in undergrad and PhD in mechanical engineering.
In mechanical?
Yeah.
So how did you get interested in bioengineering then?
Yeah, as an undergrad, I got involved in a project studying the effects of smoking on fracture healing.
Right.
So we designed these smoking chambers to put mice in. And,
right.
And that got me interested in biomechanics. But I wasn't really interested in cells. I wanted to do sort of larger scale biomechanics, but I got interested in tissue engineering and was lucky enough to work in Bob Goldberg's lab at Georgia Tech, which was a really fantastic environment, and I learned a lot. And in the course of that, I got very interested in what cells are doing.
Right.
So I realized that the action is happening at the cellular level. And
right.
so I went and did a postdoc in endothelial cell biology at the Cleveland Clinic.
Right.
And that was very stimulating, really, really a fun time learning new things. You know, I did a totally different
yeah.
thing for my postdoc.
Now, was that postdoc then located in the medical school then?
That's right, yeah. So
it's Case Western Reserve, right?
No, it was at Cleveland Clinic.
Right.
In the Lerner Research Institute. So there's an independent research institute within the Cleveland Clinic
oh, okay.
that's
okay.
independent of Case.
Right,
and, yeah.
right. And that must be highly competitive. You must be going up against MDs as well, I would think.
It was a really neat environment because there was, you know, the Lerner Institute is predominantly run by PhD researchers.
Right.
And my postdoc mentor was the chair of the institute. And so I had a lot of neat opportunities to learn new things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were they doing anything translational there?
Yeah. So there's people from you know really basic molecular biology all the way up to clinical research.
Right,
yeah.
right. Yeah, I mean, I worked in ophthalmology before I came here, and the one thing I know about Cleveland Clinic is they have one of the best eye institutes in the world, really.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting place. So you've lived, just to back up a little bit, you went from Pittsburgh down to Georgia.
That's right.
So had you lived in the South before?
No, though while I was there, my brother moved down to South Carolina to study at Clemson, and so
yeah,
he's actually still down there.
Right.
And it was that was a fun time as well.
He stayed after undergraduate, or is he
yeah.
still in school there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He lives in Greenville now.
Yeah, my wife's nephew went got a doctor, a surgeon, and he got a surgical residency down there, and they just absolutely love it.
Yeah.
And they're very much Northwestern people, and
right.
just you know Northeastern people, but just sort of the bug bit them once they got down there.
Yeah.
And then Georgia to Cleveland.
To Cleveland.
Mistake on the lake, they call it, right?
No. Cleveland is a great town. Cleveland is a great town. We really enjoyed our time there. It's a neat place because it used to be the third biggest city in the country.
Really?
And so it has all of the infrastructure of
right.
a major U.S. city, right?
Yeah.
But there's not as many people And so there's no traffic, and it's inexpensive to live there. But it was a fun place.
Have you seen the movie Trainwreck?
No.
With Amy Schumer?
No.
You should see it just to see the scenes with LeBron James in them, because
okay.
he's incredibly funny, for one thing, and you wouldn't know it, you know, unless you'd spoken to him personally, I guess. But he does this whole sort of shtick in the movie where he's trying to convince people to come visit Cleveland.
Yeah.
And telling one friend, like, you know, you got to come see me in Cleveland. You saw me, you came and saw me all the time when you were in Miami. Why don't you come see me in Cleveland? It's the exact same thing.
That's funny.
And so then from Cleveland to Notre Dame, I guess, right?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So I spent 3 years at the University of Notre Dame and as an assistant professor in aerospace and mechanical engineering.
So now they're a combined department, I guess, then?
In aerospace and mechanical?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's a group of people doing bioengineering in the department as well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So they don't have a separate department then.
That's
it's
true.
All sort of a combined.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. They. I graduated from Villanova as an undergrad,
okay.
and so
yeah.
we like to refer to Villanova as the Notre Dame is the Villanova of the Midwest, because
it's,
traditionally they've called Villanova the Notre Dame of the East, and so
that's funny.
That's the thing there. So 3 years at Notre Dame, and that's South Bend.
That's right.
And great football, obviously.
There is great football, yeah.
So, and now here at Penn. So, you're set up, probably still setting up your lab at this point, I would think.
Yeah, my lab, you know, is still sort of in boxes, but I'm very fortunate that I was able to bring four of my graduate students with me.
Oh, that's great.
And they're doing great things.
Yeah, yeah. That's fantastic. I didn't know that that was even a possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great news. So you're going to be working, from what I understand, tissue engineering and with an eye toward how different parts of the body essentially form.
Yeah, so I'm interested in a few different things. I'm interested in mechanobiology, which is how cells sense and respond to mechanical forces and mechanical cues.
Right.
And how does that work? And how does that affect cell behavior during development? So we're interested in understanding sort of the molecular mechanisms that drive cellular morphogenesis in development. And then we're interested in understanding, if we can understand how that process happens, can we recapitulate that for tissue engineering?
Right.
Right. Can we use those same mechanical cues to make cells do what we want, and can we make them behave as they do in development? So, you know, I think in tissue engineering, one of the things that has worked well in the field has been an engineer's approach to, let's take this and put it together and see what happens.
Right.
Right. And that's taken us far, but I think what's now missing is really mechanistic insight and understanding how cells make tissues.
Right.
And I think that we can look back to how are these tissues made in development when it works beautifully, right? We start off as a single cell, and that single cell becomes this beautiful, diverse, interconnected organism.
Yeah.
And it works together beautifully in a way that we can't yet achieve with traditional tissue engineering approaches.
Right, right.
And so we're interested in understanding how do these tissues form in development, and then rather than trying to mimic a mature tissue, can we mimic the developmental process to regrow tissues that way?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that seems to me, as an outsider, to be sort of one of the major thrusts of what tissue engineering is about, is this idea of providing tissue implanted into the body to replace either damaged or lost tissue in some way.
Yeah, so we're interested generally in tissues that require blood vessel supply, right? Because the problem of making a new blood vessel is really complex.
Right.
And so it's very interesting to study that in the context of development. How do how do you go from an amorphous, call it a neovascular plexus, that turns into a vascular tree,
right,
that has highly specified geometries.
So it's not even the matter of you have a hypoxia so you get VEGF being expressed, but it's beyond that. It's that the nexus is already formed, and how is it going to branch, and what's going to become arteries and what's going to become veins and all that.
Yeah.
That's
And so what are the cues that tell that
right
that pattern to form? right? And it turns out that at least a good part of those stimuli are mechanical.
Right.
So the fluid shear stress of the new blood that's being pumped through the system helps to form those blood vessels.
Right.
And then you know, when it comes to tissue engineering, one of the big limitations of current strategies is most cells have to live within 300 microns of a blood vessel, or they don't get enough nutrients to live. Right. And so if one of the other areas that we study in the lab is bone regeneration.
Right.
And so if we, particularly in the context of traumatic injuries or tumor resections where you have large volumes of bone loss. So to make new bone, an osteoblast, a bone-forming cell, has to be within a few hundred microns of a blood vessel. So in order to make a living bone cell in the right place, we have to have blood vessels along with it.
Right.
And so we're interested in understanding how do you get blood vessels where you want them, and how do you not get them where you don't want them.
So just to be clarify for myself, so that's some of the work that you're doing is specifically involved in bone modeling and mm-hmm. regeneration, I guess, mm-hmm. right? So there must be very large applications for that, I guess, you know, sort of down the road for dentistry and mouth cancers and
sure.
stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it seems like that's where I've read, at least, you know, in my sort of passing familiarity with the literature and seeing a lot of attention being paid to that. But, and so there's that one sort of thrust of tissue engineering with this idea of growing new structures and organs and all that. What are some of the other things that tissue engineering sort of does?
Yeah,
some other applications for it.
In general, or you mean things that we focus on?
Oh, in general, as well as, you know, to mention the things that you particularly
yeah,
work on.
Yeah. So I think the applications for tissue engineering are going to be in places where either you have large injuries, traumatic injuries, where the body just doesn't have the capacity to heal itself.
Right.
Or in degenerative diseases where you want to try to replace something that has degenerated. So for example, you know, the long-term goal is not just tissue engineering, but organ engineering. Can we completely regenerate a joint so that we don't have to do a total knee replacement?
Right.
Chop it off on both ends and put in ceramic and plastic.
Yeah.
But instead, can we somehow actually regenerate these tissues? And I think one of the things that the field is turning to more and more is this observation that young tissues and young cells have much greater regenerative potential than old tissues and old cells. And of course, the problem is that the people who get degenerative diseases and that face the effects tend to be old,
right?
Right. And so one of the things that the field is really paying a lot of attention to now is what are the ways that tissue engineering approaches can prevent degeneration, right? Can we maintain stem cell supplies, endogenous stem cell supplies, or can we provide biochemical cues or environmental cues that will keep degeneration from happening?
Right. So two things on that. So I think that probably the idea that the general population, of which I'm one, has a kind of familiarity to the scientific end of aging and degeneration has to do with telomeres, but it sounds like this is different.
Well, I think it's more complex than that,
okay.
Right? And I think aging is a really interesting, difficult problem.
Yeah.
And so the approach that my lab is taking is saying, let's go back and study how these cells organize and the signals that they use to talk to one another in development.
Yeah.
And if we have a traumatic injury, can we regenerate this tissue not by putting in a scaffold that tries to mimic the properties of the mature tissue, but rather recapitulate the developmental program?
Yeah.
So for example, if I have, let's say there's a patient with a large bone defect, you know, they got into a traumatic car accident, or they had a bone tumor that had to be taken out.
Right.
And you're left with this large gap that if you were to leave it alone, it would not heal. The current strategy is to take the gold standard is to take bone from somewhere else in your own body, an autologous graft. But of course, if I have a big bone defect, I can't make another big bone defect somewhere else. And so we take what we call allogeneic grafts or allografts from a cadaveric donor.
Right.
And the problem with those is that they fail to revascularize and remodel, and so you end up with a dead tissue that will refracture. And so current approaches are looking at things like growth factor delivery to stimulate bone formation, or stem cell delivery. If you put in stem cells that are primed to become osteoblasts, maybe you can grow bone back. The approach we're taking is to say, in development, our bones start off as a condensation of what we call mesenchymal cells.
Right.
These cells that have a capacity to become a whole bunch of different things. And these cells condense into a mass and they become cartilage. And then that cartilage grows and it forms a template for the shape of the what is going to be the bone.
Yeah.
And then that cartilage template gets transformed into bone through a process called endochondral ossification. And so we're interested in, one, understanding the molecular mechanisms that drive endochondral ossification. And we do this through a variety of techniques, including cell culture and animal models, where we can delete specific proteins in specific cells and study the signaling. And then we try to make tissue engineering approaches that begin with those same elements. So we make engineered mesenchymal condensations. Mm-hmm. That we drive down a chondrogenic lineage, and so we can create effectively a what's like a limb bud,
right,
only in the defect, so, and then that progresses through an endochondral mechanism.
And so I would imagine that in the process of the development of the body, you've got stem cells that can become any one of different lines,
sure,
depending on where they are in the potency chain, right? And so first question, I guess, is the process by which that is determined, what sort of development, is that determined mechanically, at least in part?
For sure, yeah. So there's some very wonderful studies. In fact, on my wall in my office, I have an original print of a 1940 paper by Victor Homburger, who is sort of a father of developmental biology. And he did this beautiful study where they took chick embryos,
mm-hmm,
and they either cut their nerves or they added chemicals to prevent the muscles from contracting. And so what you can do, what's wonderful about the chick model is that you can study development in a dish, right, in an incubator. And if you prevent muscle contraction during development, not only do you get atrophy of the muscles, but you get improper bone formation. Because those mechanical forces that are applied in utero direct the endochondral ossification process.
Huh.
And there's some wonderful work from Neve Nolan's lab at University College or at Imperial College London, where they've shown that baby kicking in actual human babies, the kicking in the womb is important for directing the development of the bones.
Right.
And if you have cases where there's not enough amniotic fluid in the womb, the biomechanics are changed, and that causes hip dysplasia problems in development.
Yeah, I mean, it stands to reason, right? If babies kick, then it must have been advantageous for babies to kick at some point way back. Otherwise, they wouldn't be kicking.
It's not just a function of, you know, mom had an extra coffee. It's these motions are essential for the morphogenesis.
So the other question I had about stem cells, when you're manipulating stem cells in the lab before you're applying them in vivo model or, you know, in even in cell culture, then are you how are you manipulating those to get them to sort of go in the direction that you want them to go in?
Yeah, so we study stem cells in vitro in a number of ways. So we like to culture them on or in extracellular matrices that are engineered to have similar properties to different tissues in the body,
right?
So we can culture these cells on extracellular matrices that have the properties of the early developmental stages, right? Or we can put them on matrices that are more like a diseased tissue, right? And we can study how does the mechanical properties of the extracellular matrix influence the cellular behavior.
So that's like Matrigel would be one of the...
Yeah, Matrigel. So Matrigel is interesting because it, you know, it has a variety of biochemical components that influence the cellular behavior, but we're also interested in looking at the mechanical properties of the matrix itself.
Yeah.
So can we modify the can we engineer a hydrogel that has different stiffness, even yeah. though it has the same density of ligands that give the same biochemical cues?
Yeah.
It just has a different mechanical stimulus.
Interesting. Right. So last science question, and of course you can punt on this one because it's going to be a ridiculous question. So how far are we before, you know, we'll be able to, engineer and create in the lab, you know, a replacement heart?
Sure. One of the scientific meetings that I attend regularly is the Orthopedic Research Society meeting, and mm-hmm. and this last year the big debate, they have a debate every year, and the big debate was over is tissue engineering going to replace traditional metals and plastics yeah. in joint repair, and I think what the discussion boiled down to is this question of can we actually prevent degeneration rather than right. replacing a whole joint.
Yeah.
Right? I think we are a long way from being able to completely regenerate a whole new heart.
Yeah.
Or a whole new knee.
Any organ for that
right.
matter. Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of things that we're learning about how can we prevent degeneration from happening.
Yeah.
Right? How can you prevent scar formation in the heart? How can you prevent myocardial infarction?
Yeah. So it's a more of a paradigm shift in terms of thinking less about treatment per se and more about prevention.
And I think we need both.
Yeah, well,
right?
Of course.
We're always going to have people who have traumatic injuries.
Yeah.
And we need to have treatments
right.
for them.
Right.
But we also want to think about prevention.
So last question, back to the sort of mundane. Had you been to Philadelphia before?
So I was here a few years ago, and was evaluating a position here at the time that I left my postdoc.
Right.
And it turns out that the situation is absolutely perfect now, and it's great to be able to be a part of the bioengineering department here.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to, you know, be engaged in this department as well as my lab over in orthopedic surgery.
Yeah.
And so myself and my wife and our family are very excited to be
yeah.
here in Philadelphia. We really love it.
Have you had a chance to see the city?
You know, we've been, right now we're sort of in the figure out neighborhoods and decide
yeah.
where we want to settle down mode. So, pretty much our weekends consist of go to a different playground and walk around the neighborhood
yeah,
and figure out the city. But there's so many neat neighborhoods.
It's very much a city of neighborhoods. There's there's a great essay from years ago by E.B. White about New York, and he says it's a city of neighborhoods and, you know, sort of describes it. And I've always thought of Philadelphia that way as well. But welcome to town.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for sitting down with me.
Thank you.